There were multiple questions that were submitted. There's a couple of questions that I didn't address because they're a little bit redundant. So if you are in here tonight and you submitted a question and you're like, dude, you didn't answer my question, we can come back to it next week. But hopefully the questions that we answer tonight will address that. In the midst of those questions, there were questions that people didn't ask that I was surprised didn't get asked. So I'm hoping that tonight maybe you'll ask those questions as kind of secondary to the questions that we're going to answer tonight. If not, I'll come back next week and I'll try to answer those. Or maybe I've already answered them for you. So let's recap. How did we define marriage? How did we define marriage a couple weeks ago? What is marriage according to God's word? Yes, unity, created by God, right? It was very good before the fall. Covenant, yeah. Okay, there's one really important piece. Man and woman, right? That excludes man and man, woman and woman. Man or woman with animal, right? God designed, sorry, I saw Courtney's face and I said that, sorry. I'm just trying to make it clear. God's word addresses that too. One man, one woman, okay? A covenant before God. That's marriage. Anything else, any union that's outside of that is not marriage, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight. What do we talk about the purpose of marriage? What's the purpose? Why did God create marriage?
To bring glory to Him.
Yep. Brings glory to Him. What else?
Symbolize Christ in the church.
Yep, yep, yep. Yeah, Christ in the church. It's very symbolic of that. What else? Disciple children, yeah. Raise and disciple children. It's a picture of the gospel. When you look at 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7, the love chapter, that's most displayed in marriage, okay? The gospel is reflected most in marriage because you have two people, two sinners, that God's still working with, trying to sanctify and make them more like Christ, and you throw them together, what do you think happens? Sparks fly, rough edges get chipped away, right? That's part of His purpose and His plan, okay? But the gospel is most demonstrated in the midst of a marriage because you're forced to live out the gospel with each other, right? Raising godly children, and I say it's partnering in God's work. God has work for us to do. Right, Matthew 28 is to make disciples. If you go back to the Garden of Eden, they were to tend his creation, right? Man and woman has dominion over God's creation. So they partner together to work, okay? So those are some purposes for marriage. And then we talked about a healthy and holy marriage because I wanted you guys to see, because everything in this that you guys see in the world is saying, it almost mocks, makes fun of, and minimizes marriage. And we see that marriage, a healthy and holy marriage, a marriage that's healthy and it's set apart, it functions differently than the world, is first firmly founded in Christ, right? We talked about the spouses, both spouses have to be believers in Jesus Christ, which should be motivation for you when you're pursuing somebody in a dating relationship. That's the first thing you got to figure out. Is this person a believer in Christ? They may say they're a believer, but you need to see their fruit. Are they growing? Do they have an active, growing relationship with Christ? Okay. The second is that you have realistic expectations. Okay. Marriage will not fulfill you. If you're going into a marriage thinking that this person's going to satisfy all of your needs and wants and every loneliness and every thing that you feel is a void, that person's not going to fill it. And if you expect that from that person, you're going to get disappointed. That's not their role. Christ is the one who does that. Okay? So we talked about sanctification. That means that God's going to be at work at both of you. That means you're going to see some ugly stuff. They're going to disappoint you. You're going to see God working and wrestling with them. We talked about love. It's not attraction, right? It's not a feeling. And I said it's not, anybody else remember what I said about that?
Conditional.
Yep, conditional. So if you're infatuated with the person and the only thing that you can think of why you like them is because they're hot, like, that's not love. That's just lust, okay? If you got the butterflies, butterflies don't last throughout your marriage, okay? I talked about your degree, get your foot in the door with an interview, right, with a job. Feelings and attraction are kind of what kickstarts the relationship, but it's not there to maintain it, if that makes sense, okay? And love is unconditional. It's a choice. It's not a feeling. It's not attraction. And last, we talked about sex, and I gave you the three eyes. You guys remember the three eyes? Lily's laughing. All right, sex is important, okay?
Indicative,
what does that mean? The health of the sex in the marriage, whether it's healthy or not, will indicate the level of intimacy that you have outside of sex in the relationship. Does that make sense? So if you guys aren't close emotionally and in other ways, it's going to impact sex in inverse, okay? So you tell a lot by how healthy that is in your marriage. And I also said it's not all-inclusive. What did I mean by that? Right.
It's not open to other people.
Right. So it was a reminder to dudes, like, if you're imagining that you're going to have sex 24 hours a day when you get married, that's not going to happen, okay? It's not realistic, all right? And it means it's also that not with anybody else. This is between you and your spouse. All right. So then I said, I finished last week with appropriate submission. And what does that mean? I don't know how to spell, so just.
I submit to your husband.
Yep. I think that's the right arrows. Right, so God created the husband to be the head of the home. He submits to, what's that? Is the other way? Is that how it rolls? All right. Wow, thank you. It's math. Here, I'll let you see it. Okay, you saw it. All right. So husbands submit to God. Wives submit to husbands. Children submit to wives. When you get these out of order in any way, your family's going to be dysfunctional. Okay? This is the way God designed it. So we are to follow that. We talked a lot about what submission means and what it doesn't mean. And lastly, we talked about it's a lifetime of diligent maintenance. We say the phrase, what got you married is whatever you did to get you married is what you continue to do to keep you married. Like when couples are dating, they put a lot of effort into going on dates, getting flowers, listening, talking on the phone, being attentive, you know, all the things. You keep doing that stuff when you get married. Okay, because that's what's going to keep you. And we talked about a list of things to be looking for. All right, so I wanted to recap that. So now we're going to go over some questions that you guys asked. So when these questions get asked, when I say them out loud, if you think it's silly, don't laugh, because this is something that somebody was interested in. So what do you do if you're dating someone but start to have feelings for someone else? I'll ask you. What do you do? Let's talk about feelings. So feelings for somebody, what? Give me the range of things that the feelings could be. Okay, yeah, so we'll say attraction. So attraction would be their physical appearance, right? What could that potentially be? Starts with L. There you go. What else could it be? Your feelings. Clarity? Describe that.
There's this idea that you fall in love with the idea of somebody, but not them themselves.
Mm. There's a John Mayer song that says, do you love me or the thought of me?
Mm, that's cool.
Mm. Good wisdom from John Mayer, right? It's funny because that song came up last week, and I don't remember why it came up, but it was part of a point I was trying to make, a biblical point. Anyways, all right. So it could be attraction. Remember, attraction isn't necessarily bad, right? Because God's wired us to be attracted to the opposite sex. That's not necessarily bad. But when it gets to the point where it's just lust, and you can equate this to, like, do you want to know the person or do you just want to know their body? There's two differences there, okay? Okay, yeah, here we go. There's a difference between those two. So you've got to sort that out. Having feelings for another person when you're dating somebody isn't necessarily bad, but it's something you've got to think through. Does that mean that the person I'm dating isn't the right person? Okay, so that's something you got to pray through, seek wisdom. But the point is, if the other person that you have feelings for, if that's a legit, I guess you'd say, attraction or potential pursuit, then you got to evaluate the person that you're dating, and you may have to call that off. If the person you're dating seems to be the right person, then it's just lust, then that's something you got to evaluate and have self-control. Because this is what's going to happen when you get married. Because guys will go into a marriage, especially if guys have struggled with lust. They think when they get married, it's going to solve all their lust problems. And if anything, it kind of awakens it. Because now you've opened this door to intimacy with another person. And it almost makes it more intense. So regardless of that, you've got to have self-control in that situation. So what I'm not saying is deny the feelings, but you just need to evaluate, is this a legit, man, this person that I'm now having feelings for, there might be a better connection and more better compatibility, and I might need to consider that. So does that make sense, guys? And that's why it's important in dating that you don't make your dating relationships physical, because you got to be able to objectively see these things. If you jump into being physically intimate with the other person, then you're going to be clouded and you can't see what God's trying to show you, right? You're not going to see that you're infatuated. You're not going to see that, man, there's no depth to this relationship besides I'm attracted to her body or his body. You guys tracking with me on that? I didn't have any verses there to kind of help us evaluate that, but it's something where talk to people that you trust, pray through it. You may or may not have to make a hard decision in that. Does that help? Does that help? 2, how do you discern whether God is telling you no or not yet to return to be with someone you love? So this, I'm assuming, is, you know, you had a relationship with somebody, maybe that was broken off, and you're trying to discern if God's bringing you back together. This is one where you have to pray. And so there's some things that I want you guys to think about. Does this potential relationship meet the requirements we've been discussing the past 2 weeks? Like when you look through that list of questions that we went through last week, is this person somebody that you would want to spend the rest of your life with? Do they have an active relationship with the Lord? Are they growing? What's their prayer life? And all the questions that I went through. If this person meets those requirements, then the question is God actually bringing you together? So then you got to evaluate, are we even in the same city? Is there proximity? Is there a willingness from the other person to reconnect? Is there maturity on both parties? Are both people mature and ready to reestablish this relationship? Is one a new believer, one not? Those are things you got to think about. So I'll give you a personal story. Okay, so when I was in high school, I was dating at the time. I would say she was my best friend. She was a Christian. She wasn't walking with the Lord. She's the one that got me to go to church, and that's when I accepted Christ when I was 18. Our relationship was still not good, meaning wasn't pure. And so a few months after that, I had a conviction like, hey, what we're doing is wrong. We can't keep doing this. And so I tried to separate so that we can do this relationship right. It turned out we just ended up breaking up, which was actually a good thing. She ends up moving to Oregon back with her family. She calls me like 6 months later and she's crying and she's like, Chris, I am so sorry. She's like, I was so mean to you. I did not respect you. And she basically was apologizing to me. And I told her, I was like, the Lord's forgiven you. And I've moved on. I'm fine. Thank you for your apology. I accept your apology. So I would say a few months later, she comes back to town because her dad still lived here. And I picked her up and we went and watched her brother's baseball game. And then it came towards later in the night. And then the conversation came up and she's like, hey, like, I want to know if there's any future between us. Because there was a guy back in Oregon who was interested in her. And the conversation came down to, like, I just don't think that we're compatible. I care for you. I think you're awesome. But I just don't think this will work. One reason it wouldn't work, she lives in Oregon. I lived in Bakersfield. Another reason was is I wasn't really ready to jump back into that relationship because I knew the ugliness and the things that didn't work for us, and I didn't think that those things had changed. So in that situation, it didn't go back. Now, when I watched her, I think that she had grown in her relationship with Christ. She had matured. I definitely had changed. So some of those aspects I think fit, but the proximity wasn't there and the compatibility I didn't think was there. So I had to decide like this isn't going to work. So really if you're in that situation, you've got to consider those things. Lord, are you bringing us back together? How's this going to work? And you really need to have a conversation with them and be honest with where you are. And you got to evaluate, am I idolizing this relationship and what it could be? Or is there really compatibility and can this really work? So that would be my wisdom on that question. Do we have any questions on that? Is there a certain age a Christian needs to be in order to start dating? This is a great question. So let's give some historical context. So if we go back to Jewish culture, when did people kind of get introduced into adulthood? How old were they? 12. Yes, right? What also happens around the age of 12? Somebody said it starts with P. Puberty. What happens when puberty? What? Your body is able to have children, right? I'm not saying you should start dating and get married at 12. I'm just saying Jewish culture, people were introduced into adulthood at a younger age, and they were given responsibility into adulthood at a younger age, okay? This is around the time when you had to choose either I'm going to go into following a rabbi and go into the ministry, or I'm going to go into a trade, right? I'm going to be a carpenter or a metal worker. Typically, people got married in their teens. So Mary, we think, was in her teens, you know. So that's cultural. That's what we see in the Bible. Now, do I think our culture empowers and equips and prepares people to start dating and get married at the age of 12? No, right? Our culture's done a horrible job at getting kids ready for marriage. The next thing that you got to evaluate is, you know, are you mature and ready? Normally, women mature much faster than men, right? So let's say you're a high school girl. If you're looking at a high school dude, homeboy ain't going to be able to support you or care for you. Dude barely to tie his shoes, right? So I would say, especially for ladies in high school, like, don't date high school dudes, right? They can't. Then the question I'm asking you, can you submit to a high school boy to lead you and trust you to lead you and guard your heart? No. In our culture, that's why we say, hey, wait till you get out of high school and then start dating. Now, am I against high school dating like 100% of the time? I would say there's probably special situations where maybe it would work. But the vast majority of the time, it's not good when people date in high school. So then it's like, okay, that's an age, but you really got to look at maturity. And I would say go back to that list that we went through last week and say, hey, I'm 18, 19, early 20s. I think I'm mature enough to start dating. And then you got to evaluate when you're pursuing somebody if they kind of meet those requirements to date. Personal example. I probably shared my story with Heather. When I first met Heather, how old do you think she was? Some of you know the story. All right. How old was I? Okay. So let me tell you the rest of the story. Do you guys all know Kenny? Okay. Kenny's my best friend. He's been my best friend for 20 years. Kenny played drums for our worship team forever. Now he just does it occasionally. He and Heather's mom, who played piano, Heather's mom passed away in 2016. They were super close. So I went to a birthday party for Kenny. I see Heather. I'm like, whoa, she's pretty awesome. So I asked Kenny after the party. I'm like, dude, who is that? That's Heather. She's 16. If you think about it, I'll kill you. Cool, right? So I didn't see her again. Fast forward a couple years, Heather's 18. I promise you, I wasn't stalking her. I literally didn't see her until then. I'm working at Chevron over here off of Ming and Camino Media. She was working at Sequoia. So I was in Sequoia all the time. Valerie, who was the supervisor at Sequoia, was best friends with Heather's mom. Well, I became good friends with Val. So I started coming in. I walked in. I'm like, oh, who is this? It's Heather behind the counter. So then Valerie's like, now she's trying to matchmake with us. Later in that summer, I invited her to a college group function. It was with a group of people. And we did that a few times. And that's when I got to know her. At that point, I am 24. She probably was still more mature than me. She still is more mature than I am. I'm telling you, there's no like rule for dating. But as we got to know each other, that checklist that I gave you, those are the things I was starting to think of. Because at this point, I was done with dating. I told God, I'm like, I am done. If I'm single the rest of my life, I don't care. I can't figure this out. Everything I do is wrong. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm over it. Heather pops in. I'm like, okay, God, are you like, is this a joke? Like, what are you doing to me? You know? So that summer, that was what I was straight up with her. I said, Heather, like, I think you're awesome. I'm not here to play games. I know you're going back to school. I think you're worth the wait. I told her that to her parents. So those next 3 years, we had a lot of phone conversations. We had a lot of conversations about what we've been talking about. So we had a lot of those conversations. So it was nice that we weren't in person. So we got 3 years to really get to know each other as friends. So when you think about age, it'd be really hard for me to put an age and say you have to wait until this point because there's a lot of factors. And you can't discount when God's actually bringing two people together. So hopefully that helps answer your question on that. 4, how does one balance having a self-sacrificial love for someone while also still communicating what you would like in a relationship? It's a great question. This really is addressing the idea of, you know, your needs and wants. How do I serve the other person? But how also do I communicate my needs and wants? I think that's kind of what we're getting at. So 1 Corinthians 13:4-7. This is the one passage I had for this question, but the next question is very similar. We're going to unpack a few more verses that I think are going to help answer both questions. So the first question you have to ask yourself is, are you demonstrating these to your potential spouse or the person that you're dating, or if you get married, the one you're dating? Because there is a balance between my needs and wants, your needs and wants. But the main thing is that when you get married, you are there to serve the other. That does not mean you ignore your needs and wants. Their needs and wants are just as much as important as yours, okay? So you think we are to serve the other person. The other thing with that is that you just have to be in communication about your needs and wants. And at some point, you've got to think about your expectations. And you have to think about, am I looking for this other person to fulfill that emptiness or those voids that only Christ can fulfill? So some of this might be like, hey, like I could see that you're upset with me, but you don't communicate with me. I need you to communicate with me when you're upset with me and not be passive aggressive, right? That's a need. That's a want. That's reasonable. If you're trying to communicate that you expect someone else to do something for you that only Christ can fulfill, for example, you know, if it's an identity issue, if you are lonely and that person is not fulfilling that loneliness, that might be indicative of your relationship with Christ. You are lonely because you're not spending time with the Lord. You're dry because you're not spending time with the Lord. It's not because your mate is not satisfying you or entertaining you. It's because your relationship with the Lord is really poor. So you've got to think through it in that way. Is my mindset there to serve my spouse? Are my expectations of my spouse realistic and biblical? And am I expecting this person to fulfill something that only Christ can fill? That may not be an adequate answer, but I think the next question in the verses we'll unpack will help finish answer that question. Does anybody have any questions about that? All right, so how do you know if you are selfish with your requests or if they are reasonable? So let's unpack some passages. 1 Corinthians 13:5. Okay, what does it mean to insist in its own way? How does that look in a relationship? Yeah, getting your own way. We would say that somebody might be manipulative. Some people use anger or aggressiveness to get their own way. But whatever it is, it's manipulating the other person to make sure whatever you want and desire is fulfilled. All right, James 3:14-16. I'll read from ESV. So you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts. So selfish ambition and jealousy. What's that look like in a relationship? Yeah, you're leveraging the relationship to get ahead. How about jealousy? Jealous. Have you ever felt jealous? When did you feel jealous? How about in a relationship? What I'm not saying is that every time you get jealous is not necessarily a bad thing, okay? Because the word says that God is jealous over us, right? He's jealous over his people and whether they worship him or they worship idols. Does that make sense? He wants us to worship him only. So in a relationship with somebody, there might be a sense of jealousy, but what that's uncovering is there might be a lack of commitment, a lack of respect for the other person. But what this is just describing is just like an overwhelming, abundant jealousy over someone else. Like, and it really uncovers, is this person satisfying my needs that only Christ can really satisfy? When you're thinking about your needs and your wants in a relationship and whether it's selfish, you got to evaluate those things in that way. Luke 9:23-25. So there's times in a relationship where you've got to deny yourself and put the other one first. There's times where you have to evaluate your wants and desires or your requests. Are they legit? Are they biblical? Is it me just wanting to get my own way? And sometimes there's going to be times where you have to kind of lay those down in a relationship because laying them down means that you're able to serve the other person. But that does not mean that we're doormats, and that doesn't mean that we never communicate our needs and our wants. The bottom line is you've got to communicate with each other. And then you've got to take it back to God's word, and you've got to evaluate those together. And that's going to happen a lot in marriage because God's working to make us more like Christ and uncover all those areas that need to be healed and fixed. Romans 15:2-3. Are you continually seeking to fulfill your requests at the expense of putting down the other person? Or is your desire to build them up in that? So how many of you, have you guys ever been in a relationship where you never seemed to, the other person was never like pleased or happy with you? Something was wrong. They were always trying to change something in you. You guys, I'm seeing some heads nod. Is your desire to build the other person up? Philippians 2:3-8. So verse 3, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you not look only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. So part of what marriage is you're blending those interests together and you're trying to figure out how to make them work. Sometimes you're going to have to sacrifice your interest for their interests. Sometimes you're going to have to, they'll sacrifice their interests for your interests. Sometimes your interests are going to be the same. But that's a relationship. Healthy relationship is there's a give and take. And there's a, I want to encourage you, I want to build you up. But the expectation is that they also want to do the same, right? It's got to work both ways. So, again, it goes back to communication. You got to communicate. And you just have to trust that in that communication and as you're seeking Christ, as you're spending time in the Word, that those things will come up. If it's selfish, if it's unrealistic, you have to trust that the Lord's going to reveal that to you and that you guys are going to come to an agreement and then you're going to work together on it. Great question. How do you make sure you don't get to the point where you aren't ever satisfied with what your partner has done for you? And that's similar to this, the previous question. John 4:14. He is our living water. Blessed though are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. All right, John 6:35. And then Psalm 107.9 KZZ. For he satisfies the longing soul, and the hungry soul he fills with good things. So when we think about being satisfied, who is the one that does the satisfying? If we are expecting our partner to satisfy us and give us that living water, make us fulfilled, we're going to be disappointed. That's not their job. That's Christ's job. Your spouse is there to compliment you, to partner with you. And there will be some sense of completeness with marriage, but it's not the satisfaction that our heart is longing for and that void in our heart. Only Christ can fill that. So, that means you got to know Christ. It means in your relationship, in your marriage, you've got to continue to pursue Christ. Because if you also place your spouse in the position of satisfying you and fulfilling you, you're actually propping them up above Christ. You're making an idol out of that relationship, and you've put them in a position that they'll never, ever be able to meet. It's unrealistic, and it's unfair. So here's some phrases that people will... unrealistic expectations about marriage in phrases, right? So one is, marriage will complete me. Only Christ can complete us. My spouse won't ever hurt me. Do you think that's true? No. So when Jesus tells us to forgive, that implies that you're going to be sinned against, right? It's not when, or not if, it's when. Life will be easy now that I'm married. Paul actually in 1 Corinthians 7 says that you'll have worldly troubles when you get married. I won't ever struggle with lust or desire another person. True or false? False. Because you're a sinner, you're going to be tempted to look at other people. Love will keep us together. That's a song. Anybody know that song? I'm not going to sing it. Okay. It's a girl that sings it. Can't do it. Yeah, so that feeling that you have, those butterflies that you have when you first start dating, those don't stay. But there's a different depth that it starts to develop that I think is much better than the butterflies as you grow in your relationship. Butterflies are there just to get the relationship started. And you find your identity in Christ alone, and that's why we're going to go into the next series, because I think we as a culture don't know who we are. Number 7. All right, so now we're going to kind of shift gears into sex, and I'm going to try to keep this as biblical as possible. So what is your response to the idea that the Bible focuses on the sex act as defining marriage? In other words, when a person has sex, does that mean that you're now married? Does that sound right? No. Okay, so there's this idea that... you know, maybe you're actually dating somebody and you're like, oh, we're going to get married anyways. We should might as well just have sex. That thought is not biblical. That thought is sin. What defines marriage? Covenant, male, female, right? One man, one woman. Yep, created by God, okay? So this created by God means that he brought the two people together. It's a male and a female. And it's a covenant. The covenant's the key word. Right? Just because you're dating somebody and you're like, yeah, we're going to get married, we might as well start having sex. Has there been a covenant and a commitment made between the two of you?
No.
There hasn't been. We initiate or we kind of establish that covenant in a marriage ceremony, and that's been done throughout history. Okay, there's something about you're in public before people and before God. You've got a minister and witnesses. You're making this public vow to be committed to each other, right? You're making a covenant with your spouse before God and before people. That's when the marriage occurs. So the question then becomes, it's what we call consummation. The act of sex after this occurs is when the marriage is the one man and one woman become one flesh, right? Is the physical intimacy part of it. So there's a group, there's even, Christians that would fall along this line that like, well, you know, you had sex, it's good enough, but there's no commitment. Ladies get kind of suckered into this more than guys do, because if a guy's pressuring a lady to have sex, but he's not willing to make a commitment, then that's your red flags and your radar should be going up, because at that point, he's more interested in your body. He's not interested in you. There's some verses I want us to read, though. Hebrews 13:4. Yep, so we talk about the marriage bed. It's one man, one woman, covenant before God that God's created. Step one, step two. And it stays within that one man and one woman. 1 Corinthians 6:12. Yeah, so he's talking about sexual morality. And then the piece that's important with this question is just because you're joined to a prostitute, that doesn't equate marriage. That's sinful. That's sex outside of the institution of marriage. Okay. 1 Corinthians 7:1-2. Yeah, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. But it's talking about a relationship with a wife or a husband, and that temptation to sexual immorality needs to be within the confines of marriage. So the bottom line is, sex is not the definition of marriage. Sex is the consummation of marriage. Sex is one of the blessings of marriage and how one man and one woman within a marriage relationship can serve one another, can love one another. But sex is not the definition of marriage. Okay, lastly, which messages about sex that we see in the Bible do you want children today to learn and embrace? It's a covenant, one man and one woman, and God created it. Bottom line, that's how we need to teach our kids. The next question, are there healthy ideas about sex that are not represented in the Bible that you think should also be a part of this conversation? So what I think that question is getting at is there something outside of Scripture, some biblical or some sex practice or thought about idea or unions that aren't represented in the Bible, should those be included? I don't know exactly where the question was going, but my mind goes to, are you saying that, do you want to have a conversation about homosexual relationships and call that marriage? Is this a question about, after we get married, what's allowable with sex? That could be leaning that direction. So I'm going to say, obviously, that isn't the conversation. It's not biblical, okay? But sometimes what we have a question about is, okay, what's okay biblically in the marriage bed? I'm not going to address all that, but I'm going to give you some verses that I think will help answer the question. So let's go Song of Solomon 4:16. So there's two people speaking. So you've got, which we think is Solomon, and then you have his bride. So his bride is the one speaking first. And she's saying, awake, O north wind, and come, O south wind, blow upon my garden, let its spices flow. So at this point, where it's pretty clear that they're now married, and she's inviting him in to enjoy her. You guys get my point? I'm not going to get any more graphic than that. Verse 5:1, this is Solomon responding. I came to my garden. I gathered my myrrh with my spice. I ate my honeycomb with my honey. I drank my wine with my milk. He's saying, I enjoyed my wife. They've been married. There was enjoyment with that sexual interaction. 1 Corinthians 7, 1 through 5. That's going to kind of paint the picture a little bit better for us. All right, so we read 1 through 2. Lily read it for earlier. It says, now concerning the matters about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Okay, there's a couple things in this passage. One is when somebody says, God designed marriage only to be for procreation, right? To have babies. There's no other purpose for that. When you read Song of Solomon and you read 1 Corinthians 7, you see that it's also for recreation. God somehow gets glory when a husband and a wife enjoy each other. So the other piece of it is, when you read verse 5, do not deprive one another. So what Paul is implying here is that a man and a woman should be doing this regularly and often. And what he's also, it's countercultural. So in those days, you had this patriarchal mindset in that culture where the man was dominant, even when it came to sex. The wife's needs or the woman's needs or desires were not considered. It was whatever the man wanted, when he wanted, whatever. What Paul is saying is that, hey, man, you don't have authority over your own body, but your wife has authority over your own body. So it means you need to consider her desires and her needs. So when we think about marriage, and we think particularly about sex in marriage, there has to be communication. So questions on what's okay and what's not okay, you guys need to have that. You need to have that discussion, and you need to be in agreement. There are going to be times in your relationship where one of you is like, I'm tired and I don't feel well. You have that discussion, and then you come to an agreement. Okay, when can this happen again? The communication is important. And Paul is saying, but don't make it too long, because God's wired us to desire and to have intimacy with our spouse. That is healthy, that is normal, and that is God, gives God glory. So a couple other things about that I want to make points of. C.S. Lewis actually is the one that made the statement. He said, lust is going after the body, love is going after the person. And so when we think about sex in marriage, that's what it should be about. It's, I want to know you. I love you, not just the look of you. And sex should be enjoyed, and it should be fun. I'm convinced, and I said earlier, that our culture doesn't prepare us for marriage. I blame the culture. There's really no excuse within the church. But if there's any group of people that should be prepared for marriage, it should be believers. If there's anybody that should have an appropriate and biblical view of what marriage is and what sex is, it should be Christians. And I'm pretty passionate about seeing our parents equipping our children to understand what marriage is and what it isn't, how to date. So again, man, I want you guys to have healthy marriages. I want you guys to be an example and a light in the world through your marriage and through your kids. I want to see your kids loving Christ and growing up to follow him and making disciples, and so hopefully answering these questions helps. So if you have more questions, scan that QR code. It's a link tree, and then you'll find one that says something about questions and prayer requests in a little text box. Just submit that to me. I'm the only one that sees it. It goes directly to me. Nobody else sees it. So if you're embarrassed even to do that, trying to think of another way you can anonymously ask a question. You can write on a piece of paper and leave it on the counter upside down or something. I should have a little box, I guess. But okay, so my plan is for next week, if you guys submit more questions, I'll answer them. If there's not a lot of questions, then we'll spend some time talking about, okay, how do we date biblically? I was hoping to answer those questions or answer that question through the questions that you ask, but we're not quite getting there yet, so. But if there's something else that I haven't addressed with dating and marriage, please let me know. So we'll address that next week. We'll take the following week off for Easter, and then the week after that, we'll start a series called Who Am I? And it's really, who am I? What's my identity? And we'll probably run that through until summer because there's a lot of material I think we need to hear. So we went super late. If you guys want to, you can go through the questions on the back. But my thought is we would just kind of end it since we answered questions. And you guys are free to hang out. Is that good? Okay, let me pray.